Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt. This is another podcast for Beyond the Mekong, broadcast by The Diplomat. And with me today is Bart Edash. Bart is the Professor of Practice at McGill University and a Distinguished Fellow with the Asia Pacific Foundation of Canada. Bart, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing great, Luke. Good to talk to you again.
It has been a while. And as you were saying just before the program, Donald Trump is certainly making his presence felt right across the planet, and the Republicans seem a lot better prepared in terms of knowing what they want to do. How are you sizing up the Republicans back in the White House, and in particular in regards to Southeast Asia?
Well, sure thing. Let's start a little bit domestically, and then I'll move quickly into what's happening relevant to our audience interested in what's happening in the Mekong, Southeast Asia. So President Trump perceives himself as a disruptive factor, and he's there to shake up Washington. And Washington arguably has not seen anything like this in modern history. He came in and he halted federal aid within the country, pausing federal grants and loans. He issued controversial pardons to those who participated in the January 6th Capitol riots. He withdrew, now getting internationally, he withdrew from the World Health Organization. He pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement. He froze U.S. international development assistance, declared a national emergency on immigration, and suspended refugee resettlement. So it's all been a little bit crazy. He issued a flurry of executive orders, which don't have the same force of law as legislation passed by Congress. But in many cases, they are sufficient to make change in policy and practice. Now, like turning to Southeast Asia and what Southeast Asia might expect, to some extent, the jury's a little bit out, because many, as I've highlighted, a lot of the actions are domestically focused into his base, and their interest is more domestic than internationally. But looking to Southeast Asia, what might we see from the Trump administration? Well, we can probably expect him to prioritize security issues in Asia over trade imbalances. We can expect him to take an even tougher line on China than in the past, whether it be the Biden administration he succeeds or Trump won, right, his first term in office. Now, interestingly, this in his first week on the job, the new Secretary of State, this is just within the last few days, Marco Rubio, formerly a senator from the state of Florida, he's engaged with some Southeast Asian leaders. He's emphasized U.S. support against what the U.S. perceives as China's provocations in the South China Sea. Rubio's also reaffirmed what he called ironclad support for the Philippines. He's talked peace and stability with Indonesia, and he's raised concerns about China's aggressive actions with Vietnam. And then after these calls that he made, the U.S. Coast Guard partnered with some regional counterparts for maritime security training in the Philippines. I mean, there's more to say about Southeast Asia, but let me just pause there to see what else you have in mind.
Well, with the smaller countries, say Cambodia and Laos, Myanmar's a bit of an interesting basket case, but USAID has basically been cut. I think the great irony in Cambodia is that the left-wing NGOs over the years have been asking for foreign aid to be cut by Western in response to this country's dreadful human rights record. The great irony, of course, is that the left-wing Democrats always fell short of that. They have imposed sanctions and gone after individuals, but it's taken a right-wing Republican who really, I don't think anybody expects Donald Trump to care about countries like Cambodia, but he's actually done what the left-wing NGOs wanted and have been crying out for over the last 20 years.
Yeah, you know, what he's done, there's so many areas where he's had a huge impact, mostly domestically, but it's starting to be felt overseas, and that is particularly the case with international development assistance. So the U.S., given its size, it's the leading provider of development assistance in the world. Yes. Not on a per capita or, you know, compared to GDP, but just the size of the country, massive aid, and its main bilateral program, so its national program for coordinating development assistance is USAID. and he's basically stopped programs, including in Southeast Asia, and this includes programs for demining, for healthcare, support for pro-democracy activists, and this is, among other things, resulted in the closure of healthcare centers and the suspension of other programs. And the suspension of U.S. funding is affecting, speaking of demining, programs in Laos, in Cambodia, in Vietnam, which could, in theory, and one can see how it might happen, lead to more casualties from unexploded bombs.
Yeah, indeed. And not dissimilar in Myanmar, which is kind of interesting. I noticed one of his human rights people came out and prioritized Myanmar, saying it was near the top of the agenda. And given the state of the war there, given China's interest, in particular the oil and gas pipeline going across the country, which is, I can't quite remember, I think it's about 10 or 20% of the energy needs in China is carried through this pipeline. Kind of one wonders whether or not Myanmar is set to become a battlefield simply because of Chinese involvement. And the Beijing is talking about setting up a joint security company with, through its soldiers and some of the rebels, particularly with the Arakan army.
Yeah, you know, Myanmar is definitely in view of the Defense Department in the U.S., the State Department. We haven't heard much in the way of announcements or plans from the U.S. government with regard to Myanmar. But as you point out, China is, there is concern, some even thinking that China could put boots on the ground to quote unquote protect Chinese assets and citizens. Mm-hmm. You know, the lack of progress that ASEAN has experienced in trying to encourage, let's call it the reintegration of Myanmar. Yep. Within ASEAN, bringing peace, stability, some sense of normalcy, because there's been so little progress, there's a vacuum, and China is seizing the opportunity to jump into that, particularly given their existing investments and ties with the country. Now, what will the U.S. do? You know, it's difficult to say with this U.S. administration, because from one day to the next, sometimes it's a matter of hours. The announcements, and sometimes quite dramatic ones, can come very quickly. I mean, we're having this, just one more point on this, we're having this conversation hours or a day before most, the U.S. government is going to impose tariffs on two of its leading trading partners and close democratic and geographic allies, Mexico and Canada. They're talking about 25% tariffs on countries they have a free trade agreement with, and also relevant to Asia. Well, that can impact Asia in ways we could talk about, but
yeah,
also
that's
on China, a 10% tariff on China coming imminently.
A lot of the smarter people in some of these countries have been anticipating these kinds of tariffs, and there's always been one argument put forward that for Chinese companies to expand, like for instance garments, and move their operations into countries like Cambodia or Laos or elsewhere where it's friendly, and that would get them around those tariffs. Will that actually work? I mean, it's kind of, I think Donald Trump would see that coming, certainly the administration, and I kind of wonder what sort of what else they've got in their armory for a trade war that they would deploy.
Well the short story on this is Donald Trump intends to, if one takes him at his word, to impose tariffs on countries around the world. Canada, Mexico, and China are the first out of the block for whatever reasons. But Southeast Asia is not likely to be spared. Now, as far as this strategy of Chinese companies investing in Southeast Asia in the last few years, not just with the Trump administration, and exporting from there, that's already been happening, right?
Yeah.
And also Western firms relocating or putting new investments in, say, Vietnam or Thailand instead of in China to diversify. Now, we know that this administration is going to be looking for that kind of behavior, and they may look past garments in certain industries that are less sensitive, right? We don't know, but for more sensitive industries, the automotive sector, which is still important to U.S. manufacturing, if we talk about anything related to to digital and tech. They will be looking closely at this, and we know this, for example, because in looking at Mexico, a free trade partner for the moment, for a few more hours at least, China has been plotting investments in Mexico to take advantage of this free trade agreement with the U.S. And it's clear that the U.S. Wants to negotiate its agreement with Canada and with Mexico, this tripartite trade agreement, and in the process try to limit the access of Chinese firms into Mexico for the purpose of manufacturing their other exports to the U.S. duty-free. So they will also be looking closer at Chinese investments in Southeast Asia, which are not taxed, not duty-free now, but are not subject to the same kinds of duties or restrictions that exports from China are.
Right. I noticed the other day that vehicle sales, or traditional vehicles, in Thailand have fallen through the floor, and it's as is everywhere else, I might add, that Chinese EVs, the electrical vehicles, they're skyrocketing. They're doing very, very well. And so I'm kind of wondering, where are countries like Thailand, which has been Toyota Hilux, Utes, those sorts of trucks, it's been a big exporter of those over the years. Where are they going to be left? I did a podcast with Keith Richberg a couple of weeks back from the Washington Post, and I think Keith...
Yep.
And Keith was saying that once Donald Trump takes over, it'll be the circus of chaos, which I think they've lived right up to. But how do countries like, say, Thailand? I mean, it's going to get very complicated.
Yeah. Well, look, they're cross-cutting currents. Okay. So
yep.
The U.S. and Thailand generally have very good relations. I mean, like every other bilateral relationship. There are irritants, right?
Mm-hmm.
But generally, relations are good. Thailand, from its perspective, wants to maintain good relations with both China and the U.S., as well, of course, its ASEAN allies and neighbors. With the U.S., I had just mentioned what Marco Rubio is doing,
yep,
in terms of outreach to some other countries in Southeast Asia on security matters. I'm sure that the U.S. will be looking for... picking up on the Biden administration's efforts to maintain ties around security with Thailand.
Mm.
At the same time, Thailand, like the rest of the world, is going to have to get used to and adapt to a Trump administration that earnestly wants to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. and wants to raise funds from tariffs. It's old school thinking, but they want to raise funds from that to finance various domestic plans and tax cuts. So Thailand's going to face tariffs like other ASEAN countries, but it may also enjoy some attention on the security side of things. But I'm not sure, you know, will that compensate for reduced sales because of higher tariff walls going to the U.S.?
Just quickly to digress slightly. Trump's attitude to tariffs, I mean, it seems to be, or simplistic, in that we'll slug another 25% on EVs and the company will just have to pay it out of its profits. But it, of course, it never really works that way, and those costs are always passed on to the consumer. Is his thinking tied down in any sort of reality? Or am I asking a stupid question?
It's certainly not a stupid question, Luke. And mainstream economic thinking... and you can actually move out toward the edges.
Right.
It argues that tariffs are not, you know, generally they're not a good idea, especially if you're going up to 25% and across the board. The thinking of the administration, there are different interpretations within the administration as to whether it's more for a negotiating tool to get other things.
Right.
But there are people genuinely think here's an opportunity to reduce imports into the U.S. to attract investment back into the U.S. to rebuild, enhance manufacturing in the U.S. And it defies certain economic logic and rules. But it, you know, the administration has shown with, you know, under this is what the president wants, and it's going full steam ahead.
Right.
So
yep.
Will it work?
Yep.
Will it work? You know, maybe there might be some short-term movements. I think you're going to see a disruption of supply chains.
Right.
What most economists are saying, and major analysts, experts in finance, international organizations, etc., they are anticipating increased inflation and increased costs to the U.S. consumer. Mm-hmm. And we're going to find out very soon with these first batch of tariffs on Mexico, the U.S., and China.
Added to that is, understand Trump was quite annoyed the other day when the U.S. Fed declined to lower interest rates, and interest rates are coming down everywhere else, and I think Donald Trump would like to see interest rates going up everywhere else and coming down in the United States. But if he's going to be fueling inflation with tariffs, there's a separation of powers with the US Fed as well as a consideration, but it's the basic tenets of economics. It seems to be escaping the administration, which I thought would happen anyway.
Well, one thing Donald Trump is doing is testing the limits of that separation of powers,
right,
and of traditional norms. And you see this in a variety of ways, including in his firing of civil servants, notwithstanding whatever protections they may have. I mean, it's a given, and it's understandable that senior political appointees of the previous administration are shown the exit. That's normal in American politics. But he's digging down deep.
Yep.
He's withholding funds domestically and internationally, testing the rules and whether he can actually do that in every instance.
Mm-hmm.
He's fired inspectors general that are supposed to be ensuring probity and proper use of funds within departments. I mean, the list goes on and on, Luke.
Right.
So can he tell the Fed what to do? He would like to. There he may finally hit a wall where he can't go that far, but he will put whatever pressure he can on the Fed to do what he wants.
Okay, so going... So going around the region, Philippines, they're in strong. Marcos Jr. swung the Philippines back well and truly behind the Americans without access to bases and basically a 180 degree swing away from Duterte's policies, which were more pro-China. Smaller countries, say like Brunei, Muslim, unlikely to win them any favours. They'll probably remain out of it. Malaysia and Indonesia, Islamic, he hasn't shown too many welcoming signs for such countries, but they would be needed, one would imagine, in terms of, say, negotiations with Myanmar, and they're also big economic powerhouses in ASEAN. When you get back to, say, countries like, say, Cambodia, which has, they both eschewed Western businesses about 7 or 8 years ago as they moved into the Chinese orbit, the Chinese have moved out. Now, over that last 5 years, they've been running massive propaganda campaigns about the Americans and what they did here during the war years. And to be honest, most of it I think is crap. But nevertheless, you have the Cambodians who have been splitting ASEAN, slagging off the Americans, and now they'd like to improve relations because they've got no money coming in from China. How closely would Trump look at that? I mean, at the end of the day, I just seem to think that they'd get a report from a US ambassador, he'd read a one-page memo saying what Cambodia has been like over the last 5 years and then basically say, we don't need them. Is that going to be the attitude going forward with some of these countries? I'm also thinking of Laos, and Myanmar's a bit different, but I think it's in the same basket.
Right. Okay. You know, trying to predict what Trump will do is the game of the day, right?
Yep.
But I think we can read tea leaves to a certain degree. Again, I come back to this administration is going to be tough on China.
Yep.
Okay? And so that can cut in different ways in a particular bilateral relationship,
mm-hmm.
and it can be a little complicated between security and commercial interests.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, if Cambodia has shifted this way or that, it's going to be a big issue for the Trump administration. Human rights abuses are of much less concern to the Trump administration than to a Democratic one. It is seen that Cambodia could play some useful role in, say, containing China or making their life more difficult or limiting their broader influence in ASEAN. I don't think the U.S. would have any problem talking to Cambodia.
Right.
This is a bit speculative, but it's based on, what announcements we have heard. Again, the Secretary of State Rubio is reaching out. Okay, countries that are not in quote-unquote China's orbit. It's not Laos and Cambodia, but the U.S. administration does want to firm up alliances in the region facing China to provide alternatives. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a waiting game.
Yep.
It's low on the priority list. Luke, there's just so much that can be done in one day, and Trump has been extraordinarily active. He's been compared to past presidents in terms of his executive orders and legislative proposals. We're just going to have to wait a bit to see what it's going to be like with the smaller countries. But they're all going to face higher tariffs. But some of them might get a break or special deals if they work with the U.S.
Right. Now, one of the reasons I'm referring to Cambodia is that the splits that have emerged in ASEAN over the last 20 years, or 15 years perhaps, have been laid firmly at Cambodia's feet because it's taken Chinese policies as their own. They've, over the South China Sea, Myanmar, there have been great schisms emerge, basically reducing ASEAN's ability to influence in its neighbours' affairs. And what I'm wondering, I can't see Cambodia in the short term moving away from China and into the Western camp. So could Trump's policies split ASEAN even further, even if it is inadvertent?
Sure, it's conceivable. I think that the Trump administration is likely to view Cambodia-China relations through the lens of great power rivalry.
Yep.
And to the extent that how friendly Cambodia remains with China, that's if the more friendly they are, the more pressure they may face from the United States. And that'll be through a combination of incentives or punitive measures.
Right. Also looking at Myanmar, earlier this month, the Americans announced that the Japanese Yakuza leader, Takeshi Ebisawa, had pleaded guilty in a Manhattan court. And this is a story that kind of went under the radar. But he has been convicted. We're waiting for sentencing of trying to smuggle yellowcake uranium out of Myanmar. They believe it was produced in northern Shan State to Iran. Now, you've got this civil conflict going on, which no one wants to know about. It's in terms of body counts and devastation, it's ranked just behind Ukraine and Palestine in that order. But if you've got a Chinese oil and gas pipeline, you've got EAOs backed by the Chinese who are sending yellow cake to Iran or trying to, I mean, all of a sudden, it's not a piddly little civil war in the eyes of Washington, of which there are many around the planet. All of a sudden, as you were saying, it becomes a pawn in the great power rivalries.
Yes, that's true. Now, so how does the U.S. respond to that? It could try to make, again, Trump loves tariffs.
Yep.
And there's not that much that Myanmar is exporting to the U.S. at this time. And certainly, in relation to China or some of its neighbors, it's relatively small. But that's one way of getting at Myanmar, if it's perceived as being unconstructive. Another thing about Trump is he is generally non-interventionist. Now, I understand that this fits awkwardly with his stated desire to take over Greenland, to take over the Panama Canal, and even to take over Canada. Perhaps that last one's been more of a joke. But he's dead serious about wanting to incorporate Greenland into the U.S. and retake the Panama Canal. And he's got his Secretary of State in Panama talking to the Panamanians about this. But he's pursuing a diplomatic route, although Trump has not disavowed any military intervention. I'd be skeptical that he would go to that, because that really hasn't been his modus operandi. He's in his first term too, he talked about getting out of Afghanistan and letting authoritarians who had expansionist plans to do what they want. So the short of it is, I don't expect military force in Myanmar, from the U.S. to be anywhere near the agenda. But where the U.S. could make life difficult for the junta, if it's seen as creating difficulties, for example, doing what you just relayed, arming Iran, that would be a great concern to the U.S., and they would take action, but it's not likely to be a full-scale military intervention or something along those lines.
Yeah, one would hope not, but yeah. Afghanistan, in the December before Biden took over, I was reading the peace agreement that the Trump administration had struck with the Taliban. It appeared like it was written by a primary school student. It was four paragraphs, and we'll do this, but you cannot take over the rest of the country, and this is the way it's going to work. And of course, nothing like that panned out at all, and it looked like Biden's mess, which to be fair, it was to a certain point. Do you think their ability to, in terms of forward projection, old school foreign diplomacy, has that improved, or is it going to be more of the mess that we did witness, you know, during Trump 1?
Okay, this time around,
yep.
Trump is better prepared. He's much better prepared. There's much more discipline within his administration. Look, it's early days. I mean, it hasn't been even 2 weeks since he took off.
Yeah, so it's something else, isn't it?
There's plenty of time for things to go wrong, but you're still going to see, you know, compared to normal, you know, day-to-day diplomacy and standards of decorum and such, he's going to be smashing these, as he already has. But in terms of being able to be kind of professional and pursuing what they want to do, they're much more organized, they're much more disciplined. Do I think that the U.S. is going to get Greenland? I realize we're moving far away from Southeast Asia.
No, that's okay. It's precedent.
They're going to try, and he's going to, you know, bluster and pursue transaction opportunities, and who knows, right? But I think you'll see a more effective administration in accomplishing its international aims. And even if it doesn't get as far as it wants to, it may move in that direction. So, okay, coming back to it.
Yep.
You mentioned Afghanistan. Well, the U.S. is no longer there, so that's not really on the table. In terms of Southeast Asia, I think there's a lot of anxiousness because he's going to go after China, and a lot of Southeast Asian countries don't want to. They realize that they have to get along with China one way or another, right?
Yep.
They worry about the chaos that may come from a deteriorating relationship between these two superpowers. They worry about the tariffs that are going to come at them. You know, I think there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of anxiousness in Southeast Asian capitals and trepidation about what may come next out of Washington.
Yeah, it's amazing how swiftly things can move after, you know, COVID years and then Uncle Joe Biden years. And I know there are several regimes in Southeast Asia who are horrified with what happened in Syria and how quickly that regime was ousted. And then when Trump starts talking about Greenland, I mean, I'm sure most of the people here in Cambodia and around the region were immediately reaching for their atlas. But it's a little bit like, well, why can't you just build bases there? You want access to the Arctic Circle? Okay, you want forward deployed bases in regards to Russia and protection of the American homeland? Okay. Why not just say we want to negotiate bases for Greenland, but instead it's this constant talk. Yeah, I mean, it's laughable. An invasion of Canada, God help us. And the way they talk about Mexico is almost old school, sort of almost racist rhetoric. And, well, in particular Greenland, it's like, you know, you can't have it. It's not yours. But I think it's scaring the bejesus out of a lot of governments in this part of the world.
And I think it's because he scares people that he can cause movement without having to, you know, marshal the forces. Okay.
Right.
One thing, Myanmar. I don't know if, you know, this has been much of a consideration among the junta. But look. Myanmar is an essential source of heavy rare earth elements.
Yes.
Okay? And these are vital ingredients for magnets used in EVs, electric vehicles, and wind turbines. Now, Trump's not particularly keen on either, but you know, he's got his close buddy Elon Musk, who's a leading global producer of EVs. Mm-hmm. In any case, you know, say that in China, in the course of a trade war with the U.S., decides to start holding back on exporting rare earths, which the U.S. needs, not only for EVs and wind turbines, but other things. And the U.S. looks at Myanmar and says, you know, actually, those minerals are important to us.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that they're looking at Greenland, is because of minerals and metals there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he might be making some, you know, some rattle some sabers and make some threats and could cause some nervousness in Myanmar as well. That's speculation, but it's not a complete stretch. He sees something he wants. He has security people telling him, you know, we're concerned about China, so we need to go get the resources we need, or to put up bases or geography to control where this could all go.
Yeah, indeed. We know it's going to be somewhat of a messed up year, but gazing into your crystal ball, where do you see ASEAN going over the next 12 months?
Okay, well, look, it's a mixed bag, and a lot is going to depend on what the Trump administration does, not only directly targeting countries in Southeast Asia or the bloc, but with China and globally. There are some positives, actually, in ASEAN, notwithstanding the challenges around the South China Sea, around Myanmar. Look, there's a strong emphasis, for example, on digital growth in the region, with initiatives to double the region's digital economy by 2030. The longstanding plans to incorporate a new member to more or less day are going to come to fruition. Okay, it's a small country. It's not necessarily going to add that much to ASEAN. Hopefully it doesn't add problems. But that's a development, and that's expansion. I think we're going to see continued infrastructure investment. And I think in terms of challenges, again, Myanmar, it's going to be a great challenge for Malaysia to spur any kind of progress. It's one of the most severe tests of internal unity. You've got geopolitical tensions, including the China-U.S. rivalry. Malaysia's close ties with China raise concern about its ability to act as an impartial mediator, especially regarding disputes in the South China Sea. But there is the potential for a more assertive approach under Malaysia's chairmanship on regional issues, especially regarding the Myanmar crisis. In terms of the economy, I think that's tariffs aside, that's one positive aspect. If you look at the forecasted economic growth of Southeast Asia compared to much of the world, it's still high. It's still a booming region. It's younger than many other regions of the world. So if we look not just to 2025 for the next, say, 5-10 years, I'm pretty bullish on ASEAN, notwithstanding these great challenges and the potential for everything to go pear-shaped. But you know, you've seen the infrastructure investment, massive investments in not only Vietnam and Thailand, Malaysia, the Philippines. So in short, it's a challenging year. There are things that you want, you know, we'd want to keep an eye on that could cause some serious concerns. Coming back to geopolitical tension and the tariffs, I don't think there's gonna be much progress in Myanmar, but given the internal conflict, who knows, it could collapse, and that could create more chaos or open the doors to some radical change that might bring stability. That's a bit hopeful and perhaps distant, but in chaos, sometimes you see things emerge that could change the course of events.
And on that note, Bart Edash, thank you very much. Fingers crossed for 2025.
Indeed, Luke. Thank you. Great pleasure speaking with you today.
All right, thank you. Cheers, mate.